Welcome to the Animal Voice. Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March 15th, 2013. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Alyssa Ray. You can try
again. That's me. Oh,
yeah,
there I am.
Yeah, there you are. Jackie and Ginny are away today. Welcome to the Meet Out Show. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement toward a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy, and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcasts here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. In honor of March 20th, which is Meet Out Day, we bring you specially themed programming today. For our first interview, we have with us Michael Weber, who is the executive director of the Farm Animal Rights Movement, a U.S. based organization that works towards ending the exploitation of animals to be used as food. Farm organizes several annual campaigns, and one of them is Meat Out, which has been in existence since 1985. The Meat Out campaign encourages all individuals to take the pledge to transition to a plant-based diet, and Michael is here today to tell us all about this program and how you can get involved. And for our feature interview today, we have with us Paul Shapiro, who is the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection of the Humane Society of the United States, and a general all-around knowledgeable person when it comes to issues on veganism and our animal agriculture system. He'll be with us today to discuss a variety of hot topics in the news pertaining to meat and the shifting from a meat-centered diet, such as the agriculture industry's efforts to suppress animal cruelty whistleblowers, the recent horse meat scandal in the UK, the current trend of falling meat consumption, and the Meatless Mondays initiative growth and progression in the US. That interview is coming up in about 33 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So on the topic of cutting out the meat and shifting to a plant-based diet, I wanted us to both personally discuss how we both practically made the transition ourselves to eliminating meat from our lifestyles. For me, I became vegetarian a really long time ago, about 20 years ago when I was a teenager. And the way I did it was I knew I wanted to stop eating meat, and that's something that I was planning to do. The way I think in my head is like, here's a plan, and I'm thinking methodically, this is how I'm going to go about it. And as soon as I moved out of my parents' house, I moved to university where I lived in residence and had to eat in cafeteria every day. I thought, okay, so I want to be a vegetarian. I don't want to eat meat anymore. But it makes sense to do it gradually. I know some people just do it like right away. They just stop eating all animals, and that wasn't the case for me. And veganism, like I didn't even know anything about dairy or eggs back then. I just knew I wanted to stop eating meat. So I thought, okay, I'll just eat meat like once a week, and we'll see how that goes. I'll just, you know, just gradually. And for me, I just sort of ate the most, what I consider to be the most palatable meat that was offered there, which was chicken salad sandwiches and pepperoni pizza. So that's how I did that. And I found that after either like a month or two, I didn't even need it once a week anymore. I thought once a month. And then Christmas came and I said, okay, I'll eat meat at my parents. And then January 1st, that was my New Year's resolution. And then I had gradually weaned myself off it, I felt, and I just really didn't feel I had a need for it. So how was it for you, Alyssa?
Well, first, I just wanted to comment on your journey. That sounds very practical and very methodical.
That's what I said.
that is the way you work, isn't it? My transition was different, I guess, because I was about 14 or 15, and my parents, I lived in separate houses, and they had both been vegetarian in the past. So when I announced that that was my choice, they were really supportive, and they sort of knew about the food in general, although I was calling myself vegetarian, but I was still eating fish and other creatures of the sea, and I pretty much replaced the meat, the flesh of the land animals, with things like cheese and fish. So Yeah, that was, I guess that was kind of my transition, and that lasted a long time because I didn't really do much more research about...
That was the same with me. I just didn't even know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I can totally sympathize with people now who don't know about factory farming issues, because once I didn't know, although I do think the information is really far out there. So you said you did that for about 10 years, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had little phases. I was vegan for a little while there, but in that period, but I didn't really do much research or really make the connection until 10 years later. So I guess my advice is to just kind of keep learning. Like if you like cutting out meat is a good step, or you know, and maybe as you said, just like on like one day a week cut it out, or 6 days a week cut it out, or like, but it is part of a journey. So not to just stop there, but to keep doing research and keep pushing yourself a little bit further. Yeah.
And I would say my advice to people is, I know it's like, it can be a mental challenge. That's sort of the challenge I'm finding now with wanting to eat more raw and go pretty much on a raw vegan diet, is it's sort of the mental challenge of, oh, it's so hard, or can I do it? But if you really, there's so many resources out there now, there's really no reasons not to do it. But I feel that if it is such a major stumbling block for you to actually to go into transitioning to a plant-based diet, just do that and make it a transition. It doesn't have to be right. It doesn't have to be all at once, right? It doesn't have to be, you know, all or nothing. A lot of people say like, oh, I could never give up ice cream or whatever, steaks. So my advice is always, okay, well, go vegetarian or vegan except for the steaks or except for the ice cream. And that is a stepping stone to a transition. If that's what you need to do, that's what you need to do. It all benefits the animals. It benefits your health and the environment. And it sure is better than following the SAD diet, the standard American diet. So yeah, that's what we have to say about that.
Okay, and I just wanted to mention that last Saturday, Allison and I and the other Jackie and Tim and Jenny and all the
Everyone.
Animal Voices hosts and 165 other people attended the
wow.
second vegan prom in Vancouver. It was at the Wise Hall last Saturday night. And yeah, it was a huge success, really. There was amazing decorations with like, first of all, I have to mention that it was like a comic book kind of superhero theme. So a lot of people were dressed up in special costumes.
Alyssa and Tim and Jackie. Everyone except for me. I just wore a prom dress.
No, you look lovely. You were dressed up too. It was great. I wanted to mention the decorations. So comic strip flags and great little comic cards with superhero foods like Nooch and quinoa and kale and kind of really stylized, gorgeous. And that was the work of, I think, Michelle Lee as part of the Vegan Party Directive team. And Melissa Balfour, I know, was part of the decorations in that team as well. And a whole bunch of other awesome people, like, put in the work to make it happen. And the food, I have to mention, there was amazing food.
It was the best.
Made all by Krista Truman, who used to work on the Animal Voices show. She made stuffed mushrooms, skewers with field roast and other things, cheese balls made out of Daya cheese. Those were, like, especially
Daya was one of the sponsors.
Amazing. And all the food was gone in 2 hours, and there was so much. It was a huge feast. Oh, and awesome dessert stuff as well. And there was a coat check there with charity donation boxes.
That was a great
and
idea.
And they said that people were really super generous, and people can choose, like, the pot they wanted to put it in, whether Mercy for Animals Canada or Liberation BC or Earth Save Canada. And they had an amazing raffle with five or six huge big baskets with
Alyssa
a whole bunch
won
of goodies.
One, right?
I sure did, yeah.
Lucky.
And yeah, that was
and the proceeds from that went to Saints, right? The animal sanctuary.
I will believe you.
Yeah,
I'm not 100%.
It did. So actually, when I learned that after, you know, I spent $10 in the raffle. Actually, the odds seemed pretty good by the time when I got there at the beginning, and I think a lot of people bought tickets, and I think a lot of money was raised for Saints, which is a senior animals in needs animal sanctuary, who we have featured on the show about a month and a half ago, I think. So if you want to check that out, they are a local sanctuary that is near here in Vancouver in Mission, BC, and they're a wonderful organization, Saints.
Yeah, speaking of, what else happened last week? Well, there was a Peaceable Kingdom screenings. So it was sponsored by Liberation BC earlier this week. The movie was A Peaceable Kingdom, The Journey Home, and it was at the Rio in Vancouver, which is a pretty big venue. It seats about 420, and apparently it was almost full. I missed it. Well, I've seen it already because we sponsored a screening a month ago or so. But yeah, it was 400 people or so in attendance. I haven't got the official count, but amazing. And yeah, I wanted to mention we did an interview with James Levesque from Tribe of Heart in February of this year, and
I think that's just fantastic, a pretty great week for vegans and for animals, and to get that many people out to the film screening. I mean, I heard there were like 300 people there. There were 300, yeah. 400. I mean, I'm just surprised even more than 100 came out, especially because we just had a screening of it. But the objective of Liberation BC, the group that put it on, was to actually get people who eat meat to go see it, instead of the usual sort of like animal rights community activists that usually go out to see those kinds of films, and then you try to bring a friend, but still that's not 300 or 400 people, right? So I think that they must have just done amazing advertising, I imagine, through the venue, because it is a movie theater itself. And I imagine that that is how they got all those people there.
And that it was free. That helps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. You've got to make those films free.
The Last Bastion against the CBC Barbarians, the longest-running classical music radio show in Canada, West Coast Classics. Rare and unusual classical music from all over the world, from 2,000 years ago to the present, all presented in its social and historical context. West Coast Classics, every Wednesday morning from 9 till noon on Co-op Radio.
You are listening to 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. I just had a couple events to mention quickly. First is Thursday, March 21st. It's the first day of spring, and there is a free film screening on UBC campus. It is Maximum Tolerated Dose. It is an amazing film that is a look inside modern animal experimentation with the animals who lived through it and the people who walked away. The film charts the lives of both humans and non-humans who've experienced animal testing firsthand, with haunting, honest testimony of scientists and lab technicians whose ethics demanded they choose a different path, as well as the simultaneously heartwarming and heartbreaking stories of animals who have been on both sides of the cage. It aims to reignite the debate about animal testing by bringing these rarely heard perspectives to the fore. So again, it's Thursday, March 21st. It's first at 7 p.m. at UBC campus. It's UBC Woodward 2, which is at the Health Sciences Mall. And one important fact to share is that it's actually not graphic. It's some stock footage, but it mostly just kind of hints at what's going on. Mostly what's sad is just to hear people talk about the work and about how they had the realization to move away from that kind of work. And we had the filmmaker Carl Arzakowski of Decipher Films on Animal Voices in July of 2012. And another event happening coming up in a couple weeks is Friday, April 5th. Nice Shoes is celebrating their second birthday. If you don't already know, Nice Shoes on Fraser Street and 20th is Vancouver's only shop for 100% vegan shoes, bags, socks, and more. And they're inviting patrons and supporters to a dinner and fundraiser for a local animal protection organization. And they have chosen this year the Association for the Protection of Fur-Bearing Animals. To learn more about them, you can visit furbeardefenders.com. And they're inviting everyone to an evening of fun, food, and laughter while helping animals. The food is going to be catered by Loving Hut Express, who is back on the streets this week, I heard. Yes. That's at the Roundhouse at Yale Town. We have a 100% vegan food cart.
And yeah, so they'll be serving up mac and cheese and a delicious kind of grilled Gardein pesto sandwich. Leslie Fox, the executive director for Bear Defenders, will be there to update everyone about their recent campaigns. There's going to be some amazing raffle prizes. And the ticket price for that night is $35. It covers the cost of food and donations to Fur Bears. And everything sold at Nice Shoes that night will also, 10% of that will go towards Fur Bears as well. So you can arrive at 6 or 7:30 p.m. and stay as long as you'd like. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Tickets available online or at Nice Shoes or at Fur Bear Defender's office. And if you want to get in on the food, make sure you get it by get your tickets by April 1st. Yeah.
Roots Reggae, heard every Friday night from midnight until daylight. 7 hours long and 7 hours strong, giving you music for the mind, soul, and body. It's an holistic experience. We say it's ITIL and vital. My name is Lyndon V, and you've got it locked in Vancouver's Healing Station, 100.5 FM CFRO.
We love our pets. They're part of our families. But each year, billions of pigs, cows, and other animals just as smart and lovable as our pets are brutalized and killed for our dinner plates. Only you can stop the suffering. This spring, consider a vegan diet, a compassionate diet of delicious fruits, vegetables, nuts, and grains that's great for our health and great for the environment. Visit meatout.org for free recipes and information.
For our first interview today for our Meat Out themed show, we have Executive Director Michael Weber of the Farm Animal Rights Movement with us. FARM is the nonprofit organization behind this campaign, which is an annual international observance helping individuals evolve to a wholesome, compassionate diet of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. Meat Out Day has been happening since 1985, and Michael is here today to speak to us about Meat Out 2013. Hello, Michael, and welcome back to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, we typically do talk about Meat Out on the show at this time of the year, but we've never had you on the show to officially speak about the campaign. So I want to know all about the focus of the campaign for 2013. But to start first, could you give us some background about the inception of Meat Out? I know that FARM runs several annual programs that promote cutting out the meat and transitioning to a plant-based diet. So what is Meat Out specifically all about?
Yeah, well, many of our programs are focused on exposing, you know, the cruelty of animal agriculture to people. But Meat Out's a little bit different. I would say that really the difference is here that we're going after what you might call the low-hanging fruit. So we're looking for people who are already curious about trying out veganism, who just kind of need a little push to give it a try. And the thought process is that, you know, a lot of people are more likely to do something like this when they feel that a lot of others are doing it with them. And so Meat Out actually started in 1985, and it was a play off the campaign that at the time was going around to get people to quit smoking. That was called the Great American Smokeout. And so our president, Alex Hirschaft, and a few of his fellow activists at the time kind of were brainstorming and said, what if we had a Great American Meat Out, you know, a day that everyone just like, you know, instead of a day for everyone to kick the smoking habit, for everyone to kick the meat habit. And so that's how the campaign was born, and you know it's been going on for almost 30 years now. And this year, the focus is on getting people to pledge to eat vegan on Meat Out Day. So instead of having a lot of actions on March 20th itself, March 20th is the day of Meat Out, the first day of spring. This year, we're focusing on a week of action, which actually starts today. So it's March 13th through 19th is the Meat Out week of action. And in this time, our grassroots activists across the world are going to be collecting Meat Out pledges. And that way we'll have, ideally up to 25,000 people we're hoping for will be taking the pledge to eat vegan on Meat Out Day.
So if people want to take the pledge, I know you have it set up on their website. Can you talk about, like, say someone listening to this right now wants to go take the pledge, how can they do that?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not hard at all. If they were to go to meatout.org, pretty much every page they click on could get them to the pledge. But specifically on the left, there is a big module that says Pledge Now. And if they wanted to skip that, they could just go to meetout.org/pledge. So we have done everything in our power to make it nice and easy. And yeah, I think it's a really great idea for anyone listening to the show who is not vegan, just to say, give it a try for a day. And in fact, it's we have three options, actually. So they can either check to go vegan for a day, or every Monday, or every day to go fully vegan. So if any listeners already know how to go vegan for a day and want to up the knot, you know, up it a little bit, they can go vegan every Monday, and we will send them our Meet Out Mondays email every week, and they can also pledge to go vegan every day. And again, that will just be, you know, if there's anyone who is mostly vegan already and just wants to take that final step and go vegan all the time, you know, we'll have that option for them as well.
So for 2013, what are the national trends in going meat-free that you are seeing, being on the forefront of this movement?
Yeah, well, as far as the numbers, I mean, things are looking great, you know, for the movement to get people to go vegan. I mean, we are seeing not only more people going vegan, but also a lot more people reducing their meat consumption. You know, the number of people who are deliberately choosing to eat vegan meals at least some of the time is skyrocketing. And in the U.S. at least, the number of animals being raised and killed for food has been going down for the past few years, for really the first time since World War II. So we're seeing great, great things on that front. And I think that's, you know, really a double whammy of, you know, part of it is all the great work being done by the animal organizations, you know, including Farm, I would hope. So, you know, part of it is all the work to expose what's going on and to make these transitions easier for people. And then a lot of that also is actually the big growth of vegan products on the market, and, you know, and tasty vegan products. So, you know, more and more now, the companies who are making vegan products are really looking at the science and finding out exactly what it is about that product, you know, that people crave so badly. So instead of just, you know, putting some lentils in a blender and calling it a veggie burger, which I personally like, I think the products more and more now are really looking at, you know, what it is that makes people crave these products so much and finding ways to make animal-free versions of them. Last year, around Meat Out, we actually had an article written about us by Time Magazine that was called The Meatless and Less Meat Revolution. And that article, which can be easily Googled, talked all about the growth in vegan products, how they're taking over a bigger and bigger share of the market each year. So I think that, you know, that being paired with all the exposure about, you know, what happens to animals on farms is really a big source of this.
So quick question for you, what are some of your favorite of these vegan products?
Putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, I like most of them. I like almost all of them, and I certainly, you know, wouldn't want to put any of them on too much of a spotlight over the others. But a couple that I find myself grabbing more often than others are the Guardian Chicken products.
Okay.
I really like.
That's made here in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah, it is. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I used to make a lot of seitan, and I still make seitan, but honestly not quite as often anymore. It definitely happens that if I'm making a stew or some enchiladas or a curry, or I normally make seitan, I say, you know, I can just throw some Gardein in there, and it's just as good, if not better, than the stuff I make myself. So definitely been finding myself using more Gardein. I really like the Daya cheese, of course, which is also
made in
Vancouver.
Yes.
Oh my God!
Awesome!
So
you should move here.
Destroying the market right now. The market,
yeah.
I mean, destroying the market for animal products. That is, and taking over the market for vegan products. So yeah, those two are incredible. I also really like the tofurkey sausages.
That's what I was going to say next. The Italian sausage,
yeah.
The best. So another aspect of the annual meetup revolves around activists in their own community spreading the word by holding various outreach events. So if people want to promote meetup this week or just do outreach at any time throughout the year, what kinds of activities do you suggest?
Yeah, well, if you're looking, again, to kind of reach this low-hanging fruit and you want to give people this nudge who are already probably kind of interested, I think that the food samplings are a great, great form of outreach. So then that's what Meat Out promotes. So if someone's looking to reach people that they don't know if they're already interested or not, I might say to maybe show some of the graphic footage or whatnot. But if you're talking about people that are already kind of on board, you know, maybe if you're going to be at a health food store and you want to promote the sale of these products at the health food store instead of the promotion of the, you know, maybe the Happy Meat products. So if you want to promote the production and sale of these vegan products, I think that the food samplings are the best thing that someone can do. And we do them for Meatout and actually make it easier for people by offering this activism opportunity. And we partnered with Veg Fund this year.
Mm-hmm.
So Veg Fund is an organization that gives grants for people to give out free vegan food samples. And we've partnered with them to give activists across the U.S. and Canada the opportunity to have free, tofurkey, Gardein, Daya, all the products we just talked about. And they'll do that all year round. And so if someone does want to get involved for Meatout, we're cutting it a little close now. It's probably getting too late for us to send handouts and promotional materials. But Veg Fund just announced today on their Facebook that they're still accepting last-minute applications. So I would say that if someone wants to do a Meatout event, what they can do is get in touch with Veg Fund ASAP and fill out the form to get their funding secured for their vegan food samples, and then go to the Meatout website and register that event so that people know about it. So that's the two things I would recommend that someone does.
Yeah.
And if they don't have it in them to do an actual event in their community, they can just promote that pledge online. Just go on your Facebook and promote that pledge and tell your friends to share it. And ideally, that will do the trick.
Mm-hmm. I just want to point out, too, regarding the events where you're handing out free samples, it's a really good way to do outreach to the public because it draws them to you because people want the free food. Whereas otherwise, if they see you at a table that says vegan on it, they might be not as willing to come and approach you to get information. So it's a real good way to start a dialogue with people. Here, have a free piece of tofurkey. And, what's your diet like? And do you want to learn more? So...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We've been finding more and more that whether we like it or not, there's definitely a what's in it for me that comes with people talking to us about these issues. At this point, I would say that a table without an incentive is almost not worth having. So there's got to be something there beyond just listen to me that gets people to come to that table. They can listen to anyone at any time. A lot of people to listen to. We're all bombarded with different messages from different people constantly. And so I would say that, the food samples and then the pay-per-view style activism, which is where you pay someone $1 to watch, the graphic footage, that things like that are really what to me makes the difference between a table that just has a few people walking by and stopping versus a table that has a flood of people where you can't, where you've got more people than you can handle, which is what we want, of course. So
I think that the campaign itself brings the issue to the forefront of people's minds who may have never considered going meat-free before, so it seems like this day of action can act as a stepping stone towards a progressive lifestyle change for one's health and for the animals and the environment. For those who pledge to go meat-free on March 20th, what do you recommend they do if they want to learn and do more beyond this day?
Well, yeah, if they want to go beyond just March 20th, I would recommend they take a pledge beyond just March 20th. Again, we've got the option for just March 20th, and that should be for someone, I think, who's never eaten vegan for a day in their life. If someone has never gone a vegan day, then just say you're going to do it March 20th, and that's a great start. But if someone already eats vegan now and then, and they want to learn and do more, again, I would really recommend they just go for one day a week. That's also very easy. Anyone can do one day a week. It will make an immediate impact, obviously, on their health, for the environment, for animals, and it will give them that first step to be able to go beyond just the one day a week. And again, when they do that, they'll be able to learn more because we'll send them free recipes every single week in their email. We'll send health tips. We'll send, news items. And we'll also direct them to our Live Vegan site. That's livevegan.org. And that site has a whole multitude of ways that they can see different products. We've got this Make the Switch tool on livevegan.org where you click the type of animal food that you like, be it cheese or, chicken or pork or whatever, and then it pops up a list of products that can replace it. And so, if someone, again, wants to do more, I would say pledge to do more and then visit that Live Vegan site, and there's a whole number of ways that they can learn how to make their transition, smoother and, more fun and easier.
Thank you for coming on the show today, Michael, to tell us about Meatout 2013. Pledge to go meat free on March 20th and beyond, and encourage others to do so as well. For more information on this campaign, please visit www.meatout.org. Thanks, Michael.
All right. Thanks so much.
You are listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Just have a few news items for you here. First, the British Columbia Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, or the BCSPCA, has launched a new animal abuse hotline to respond to complaints of animal cruelty and neglect across the province. Calls to the new toll-free hotline are fielded by staff at a Victoria-based BCSPCA call center, and details are dispatched to regionally based BCSPCA constables for investigation. And the hope is that they're streamlining the process and centralizing it, and therefore freeing up staff in the community branches so they can spend more time providing hands-on care for the animals that are already in the facilities. They investigate more than 6,000 complaints of animal abuse a year and depend on members of the community to alert them to situations where animals are in danger. The new hotline will initially field calls just pertaining to animal cruelty, but the BCSPCA plans to eventually broaden the scope of the new call center to include wildlife calls and general inquiries. So the toll-free hotline that you should program in your phone is 1-855-622-7722. In other BC news, there's 15 ailing mini donkeys on a Vancouver island desperately in need of veterinary care and relocation because the owner of the farm has fallen ill and is unable to care for them. So Turtle Valley Donkey Refuge Society received a call from the owner, and they're now trying to relocate the 15 donkeys there. Turtle Valley Donkey Refuge Society is Western Canada's only donkey sanctuary located in around Chase, BC, which is east of Kamloops. It's run by Shirley Mainprize and Robert Miller. And they've set aside $10,000 for the rescue, but that eats up almost half of their annual budget, a large part of which they receive as a gaming grant from the provincial government. 41 donkeys at the sanctuary are already at the sanctuary, and of course their resources, like most sanctuaries, are pretty pretty tapped. So they're calling on the public now for help with donations and with this big move and all the vet care that's needed. You can call 250-679-2778 to get in touch with the sanctuary, or just search their name online. I found it just by searching Donkey Refuge BC. And now to China. Over the last week, authorities have recovered 6,600 dead pigs so far from a river that provides drinking water to Shanghai. Officials say the water supply remains safe and they're continually doing testing, but obviously residents are quite concerned about this. The surge of dumping of dead pigs, believed to be from swine farms upstream, has followed police campaigns against the sale of pork products made from diseased pigs. On Wednesday, a court sentenced 46 people to jail for producing unsafe pork from sick pigs they'd acquired and slaughtered between 2010 and 2012. Officials say 13,708 pounds of diseased pork have been seized. In another operation last year, police broke up a gang that acquired and slaughtered diseased pigs. Provincial authorities said police arrested 12 suspects and confiscated nearly 12 tons of tainted pork. That's pretty gross. I saw one article in Mother Jones magazine, I guess online, called China's Dead Hog Scandal is Gross, but So Are the Hog Feces in U.S. Waterways. According to the article, there's about 18 million pigs just in Iowa, concentrated on intensive operations there. And along with all the pigs, there's millions of other animals that are farmed for their flesh and eggs and milk. And just the waste produced in Iowa is as much as 471 million people, more than the human waste produced in the entire U.S. in a year. The waterways there are vastly polluted, and over the last 10 years, the pollution has just gone higher and higher and higher. So I thought that was an interesting take on it. Let's not point the finger in other countries. Let's just look at our own problems here. So that's the news today.
Thanks so much for taking care of that, Alyssa. For our feature interview today, we have Paul Shapiro on the show. He is the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection of the Humane Society of the United States, and just a really knowledgeable and well-spoken person when it comes to current issues pertaining to animals used for food. So we have him here on the show today to discuss with us and share with us his thoughts about various meat-out topics that are affecting us today in the news. Hello, Paul, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. Well, let's start by talking about the horse meat scandal in the United Kingdom. Recently, horse meat has been discovered in food products that were advertised as beef, and this has shocked the nation and made the news headlines as being a source of outrage among the British people. I'm trying to make sense of exactly what the crux of the scandal entails. Is it because a meat product has been labeled incorrectly, or is it because it's a meat product that British people don't want to eat, that is horse? What is your whole take on this issue?
Well, I think there are probably three reasons why people are so outraged. The first is that there is a consumer fraud aspect, that people are buying meat products that are labeled as one thing, like beef, and it turns out to actually be horse meat. And so you can understand that people, just on principle, would be outraged by the consumer fraud. The second is that there are a lot of drugs that horses are given that are not fit for human consumption, drugs used by the racing industry, for example. And so there's a lot of concern about whether this meat is actually safe for people to eat. Now, of course, we know that other farm animals like cattle and pigs and chickens and turkeys are also fed all types of drugs, oftentimes given growth-promoting hormones or non-therapeutic antibiotics and so on. But the drugs that are used in the horse racing industry are typically given to the animals with the presumption that they're not going to be eaten. And then the third reason is really, I think, what you alluded to, which is that many Western consumers just have an aversion to eating horses. They view horses not as farm animals, but rather as companion animals. And just as people would be sickened if they learned that they were eating dog meat or cat meat, they were sickened to learn that they were eating horse meat. And there's this problem of unwanted horses that we have in both Europe and in North America. And just in the same way that we have a problem with unwanted dogs and cats, we have an overbreeding problem, and so there are too many. But the answer isn't to build slaughter plants to slaughter dogs and cats and send their meat over to countries where people might not have a problem with eating dog or cat meat. The answer, of course, is to take care of this breeding problem and to reduce the number of unwanted animals who exist.
Well, an interesting outcome from this whole scandal is the Guardian newspaper actually just reported this week that 6 in 10 Britons have now changed their shopping habits since the scandal. So it's definitely raising awareness, consumer awareness of what's in their food, what they're buying. And I also read this week that I think it's something like, and I'm sure you've read this as well, something like 24% of British people are now eating vegetarian. Have you heard of that? And what do you think of that?
So the research is pretty clear that Britons are, by and large, reducing their meat consumption as a result of this scandal. And a portion of them are actually just becoming vegetarian altogether. But a much larger portion are cutting back on their meat consumption. They're eating more plants, and they're eating fewer animals. And what we see is the same thing in the United States, not as a result of a horse meat scandal, but what we're seeing is that the number of vegans and vegetarians has remained relatively stable. It's about 5% of the population. But the number of people who say that they eat vegetarian more than half the time is up at around 16%. So you think about 16% of people who are vegetarian more than half the time, at least self-reportedly. That is a greater reduction in demand for meat than all of the vegetarians and vegans combined. So for somebody like myself, who's been a vegan for almost 20 years, I think about the impact that just getting people to reduce their meat consumption can have in terms of reducing per capita meat demand and reducing the total number of animals who are suffering in factory farms and slaughter plants. So this horse meat scandal in the UK is certainly moving things in that direction as well.
So also currently in the news is the issue of the agriculture industry's efforts to suppress whistleblowers, that is, animal advocates who have been increasingly conducting undercover investigations and discovering egregious cruelties to animals in the ag industry, and then have reported these violations to the authorities and especially to the media. Can you tell us about the ag gag bills that have been introduced in the past year and the ones that are in the process of being introduced now in certain states?
Absolutely. The Humane Society of the United States and other fantastic animal advocacy organizations have been conducting whistleblowing exposés at factory farms, at livestock auctions, at slaughter plants, and routinely documenting horrendous abuses to farm animals that few people would want to bear witness to, let alone would they want to participate in causing the cruelty themselves. The ag industry's response to these exposés has not been to try to prevent the abuses from taking place, but rather it's been to try to prevent Americans and all people from even finding out about those abuses in the first place. So what we see is an industry that is desperate to hide its standard practices, and on the one hand, it's hard to really blame them. Imagine if you had a standard practice in your business where you took animals and locked them in cages so cramped they couldn't even turn around for essentially their entire lives. You'd probably want to hide that from the public, too. Unfortunately for the meat industry, this effort is seriously backfiring because not only are many legislators rejecting these outrageous whistleblower suppression bills, but they're also being used as an opportunity to demonstrate to the public just how much this industry has to hide. And so TV crew after TV crew and radio show are doing stories about this phenomenon of these whistleblower suppression bills and making it clear to their viewers or to their listeners just how desperate this industry is to keep Americans and the general public around the world in the dark about animal abuse on factory farms.
I find it interesting that sort of like the biggest argument that I could see from the animal agriculture side was there was a blog that the Animal Agriculture Alliance, who defends the farm protection bills, as they call them, saying that, you know, if these animal rights investigators truly cared about animal welfare, they wouldn't wait one second to report a valid issue to the proper authorities because, as you know, it's often over a period of weeks or maybe months that this undercover footage is collected and then it's reported to the authorities and the media. What do you think of that defense?
Well, food safety and animal cruelty investigations often require weeks of evidence gathering to build the cases, just as we would never force the police to turn over all of their evidence acquired on the first day of an investigation. Animal welfare whistleblowers shouldn't be forced to do so either. There's a reason why animal protection groups oppose these bills while agribusiness industry officials support it, and that is because it may be drafted to appear like it is an animal protection measure when in reality it's intended just to obstruct whistleblowers from documenting farm animal abuse. Basically, imagine if you're conducting an investigation and you're trying to find out if there is a pattern of abuse at this facility. Documenting one person hitting an animal one time isn't going to do that. Right. What's needed in these often is weeks of evidence gathering. At that point, it gets turned over, if there is evidence of criminal behavior, to the authorities, just in the same way the police would conduct an investigation.
So if we have these ag gag bills that are coming up all over the country, who is going to regulate the industry if these undercover investigations stop?
Well, fortunately, nearly every state where such a bill has been introduced has rejected it. However, this is an industry that has nearly no regulation at all now. In the United States, there's not a single federal law that relates to the treatment of any farm animal while they're on a farm, even though we do have a law that relates to the treatment of animals or some animals in slaughter plants. That's less than 1% of these animals' lives. For 99% of their lives while they're on a factory farm, there's no federal legal protection whatsoever. And even state anti-cruelty codes often exempt customary agricultural practices, regardless of how abusive those practices may be. So if you were to take your dog, for example, to a veterinarian to have him neutered, and your veterinarian just decided to go to town on the dog, no painkiller, and just cut open his scrotum and castrated him without any painkiller, your vet could probably lose his license, be charged with criminal cruelty, and thrown in jail. Whereas on a farm, if you did the same exact thing to a pig or to a calf where you cut off their genitals without any painkiller whatsoever, it's perfectly legal because most states exempt customary agricultural practices regardless of how abusive those practices may be. So something that could get you thrown in jail for doing to a dog, you can do with impunity to a pig or to a calf, not because pigs and calves don't suffer just like dogs do, but only because it's a standard agribusiness practice. So this is an industry that, with or without these bills, has nearly no regulation at all when it comes to animal welfare.
So on the topic of meat out, that's the theme of our show, and cutting out meat from one's diet, you actually wrote an article last fall for Veg News magazine, which I have to say I've had bookmarked on my computer internet browser since last fall when you wrote it. I wanted just sort of a chance to reference it in the show. Today's perfect day is to interview the author. Anyways, this article claims that meat consumption in the U.S. is falling. Americans and Canadians, of course, too, are known as being diehard huge meat eaters. How is it that meat consumption has taken a nosedive in the last 5 years, as you've put it? Can you paint us a picture of what is happening here?
Yes, and it's a shocking and pleasantly shocking picture. So first of all, you're absolutely right that both the U.S. and Canada are known for having relatively high rates of per capita meat consumption. The U.S. much more than Canada, but Canada is still pretty high. However, at least in the U.S., meat consumption has fallen off of a cliff in the last 5 years. From 2007 to the present, consumption of meat has declined by more than 12% in the United States. And that's a huge number, so huge, in fact, that there are today, despite the fact that we have more humans in the country than we did 5 years ago, there are half a billion fewer farm animals being raised and killed for food every single year. That is massive. And there are a lot of reasons for this. One is increasing concerns about health. Two is increasing concerns about animal cruelty and the environment. Three is the recession. We've also seen drought in the country, which has increased prices for corn and other feedstuffs that are given to farm animals. But all of this is creating a circumstance where demand for meat is declining. And we're seeing the rise of interest in meat reduction. So, for example, campaigns like Meatless Mondays are helping people dip their toe into meat-free eating and realizing how wonderful it is. Because every single time we sit down to eat, we can stand up for a healthier, more humane planet. And just by eating more plants and by eating fewer animals, we can help really make a difference. So, for example, the Los Angeles Unified School District, the second largest school district in the United States, they serve 650,000 students every single day. After working with the Humane Society of the United States, the LA school system is now doing Meatless Mondays every single Monday. So every Monday, they're serving 650,000 exclusively vegetarian meals to all of their students. Think about the type of reduction in demand that that creates. 650,000 fewer meals of meat every single week just from the decision of one school district alone. That's showing the popularity of campaigns like Meatless Mondays and the popularity of meat reduction in general. Then you couple that with the fact that numerous cultural icons are also touting meat-free eating. People like Bill Clinton, Oprah Winfrey, Ellen DeGeneres are all touting the benefits of plant-based eating. And you see how we're reaching this perfect storm that's leading us to a better, healthier, more humane society.
It really seems that it is, it's all these, as you said, it's a perfect storm. I see it as all these different reasons and undercover investigations and Bill Clinton and Oprah and Meatless Mondays. I feel like it's all coming together, and that's really what's creating the change. I think you mentioned this in your article, or maybe I read it somewhere else, that it's not so much even vegetarianism that is rising, but it's flexitarianism. Is that true, do you think?
It's absolutely true. The polling on this is crystal clear. The percentage of Americans who are vegetarian has remained pretty constant for a long time. The percentage of people who are cutting back on their meat consumption, who are so-called flexitarians, people more flexible with their diet, who want to be vegetarian part of the time, that is the number that is drastically increasing. And that, to be perfectly frank, is what the meat industry is most concerned about. The meat industry is far more concerned about things like Meatless Mondays than they are about people becoming strict vegans. Now, again, I say this as a vegan myself, but I look at the reality of reading the industry's trade journals and reading their own commentaries and noticing what they're concerned about. And I'll tell you, meat reduction is what they are concerned about.
And what do you think a program such as Meatless Mondays in schools mean to, what does it mean to you progressively and ultimately for the health of the people and protection of animals? I think, for me personally, I think it's just a snowball effect. It's going to keep going.
Yeah, I think that progress tends to beget progress. Mm-hmm. I think also that this helps to mainstream an idea that a decade or two ago was less mainstream than it is today. I think that campaigns like Meatless Mondays help show people a new way of eating that is better for the planet, better for animals, and certainly better for themselves. And some people may wonder, well, you know, can going vegetarian one day a week really make a difference for their health? Sure, it may be better for the planet and animals, but can it make a difference for their health? Well, Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, their Center for a Livable Future, did a study on this, and they looked and saw what the result would be if every person did that. And what they found was that you can reduce your risk of early mortality by up to 11% just by going vegetarian one day a week and replacing that meat with other healthy proteins like nuts or legumes like lentils. 11%.
That's huge.
Just from one day a week. If there were a drug that could reduce your risk of early mortality by 11%, it would be a billion-dollar blockbuster drug that everybody would be on. And yet here we have a delicious, healthy, more humane, convenient way to do just that. It's a win-win all around.
So I've read before about the tipping point, and at what point is it that society follows along with a trend in what other people are doing? And what I've read before is that I think it takes about 10 to 11% of society to be acting and thinking in a certain way in order for the rest of the people to follow along. And that sort of actually plays in line with also reading in various publications that, you know, society is made up of about 5 or 10% leaders and then the rest followers. How do you feel? Do you feel we are at the point of reaching this tipping point?
Well, I certainly read that too and was impressed by it. And I don't know at what point there will be a tipping point. I mean, you look at other social issues and, you know, for example, you have far more than that. A number of people are, you know, in favor of banning abortion, for example, but you don't see that necessarily becoming a consensus view.
Right.
And the same with pro-choice, too. It's far higher than that. So I would like to talk to Malcolm Gladwell about that and find out.
Is he the one that wrote that?
He is, yeah.
Okay.
I would love to talk with him and find out his view on that. What I do think, though, is that the more people who are get into meat-free eating, the more mainstream it becomes, the more common it becomes, and the easier it is for people to do. The moral arguments are so compelling from an animal and environmental point of view. The health arguments are also very compelling, but oftentimes we don't make decisions based on what's a good argument. We like to believe that we're rational creatures, but oftentimes other less rational factors are used in our own calculations about what we should or shouldn't do. And for better or worse, convenience and popularity of something really do matter. And so as meat-free eating becomes more and more mainstream, I think you'll see more and more people getting on board, like, as you said, a snowball effect.
Yeah, well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you for coming on the show today, Paul, to give us your thoughts and comments about all these various meat-out-themed issues. For a guide to meat-free meals, I want to point out that you can visit the Humane Society's website at humanesociety.org/meat-free. Thanks so much, Paul, and have a good day.
Allison, thanks so much for having me on. Have a wonderful weekend. You do a great job.
Thank you. Take care.
You are listening to 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio here in Vancouver. British Columbia, Canada. And this is the Animal Voices Show, and that's all we have for you today. You can keep in touch with us at animalvoices.org. You'll find videos there and more information about our guests. And you can also find links to keep in touch with us via social networking. We highly recommend that. Thank you so much. And I wanted to mention what's on next week's show. We have Olivier Baraville from InterNiche. It's the International Network for Humane Education. What they're aiming for is high quality, fully humane education and training in medicine, veterinary medicine, and biological science. They support progressive science teaching and the replacement of animal experiments by working with teachers to introduce alternatives and with students to support freedom of conscience. Olivier was one of the speakers at the Animal Advocacy Camp this year, and it was very interesting talk he did there. So we really look forward to hearing him on the show next week. We will also be featuring Shark, a group based in the U.S., I think. They're called Showing Animals Respect and Kindness, Shark. And they're going to be talking about pigeon shoots, which happen in a couple places in the U.S. still. So please stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith coming up right after this.
Yeah, man, I treat a vegan way, you know?
Attitude on Jason.
Yeah, man, I loot and fire Jason a Ross attitude.
Tell him to loot on. All you for kill for eat.
For real, king, man.
But them say swine and them dinner.
So when I got you nothing dead, you know?
Fire,
choose life.
Treat the toughest way.
No bones, no blood in the kitchen. We not gonna mix up in a vampire living. No bones, no blood in the kitchen. And I respect for life. Run, here come the butcher man. When he come in with his knife, I'm more pain, I'm more death, I bear murder. Life didn't take for them steak and hamburger. They raid the plants and seed in the mud. Then to take you some flesh in the gold of blood. Carnivore, stop fighting it, stop fighting it. Hey, give it a life and try, you just might get some enlightenment. And this the one for the wall of my vegetarians. Raw food isn't vegans and all the breatharians. Yo, cause I and I not put no dead. You know we simple. Humbleness, we have to live life simple. To put some food upon the plate. I mean, I need no hook, mean I need no bait. I unite the roots, my food, me not fish shoot. I give me vegetable and some fruit. Nigga, so no bones, no blood in our kitchen.
We not gonna mix up in a vampire living.
No bones, no blood in our kitchen.
Them Rasta from look up in a them health book page. Vegetarian will always live. Cause everything we eat it always positive. And everything you drink it never yet negative. You are what you eat, that's why you walk like pig. You are what you eat, that's why you like pig. You treat your body wrong, you wanna brave, you are dead. Yo, don't panic, cause I'm organic. Beer soy soup in a me kitchen, yes, I got it. Yo, don't panic, cause I'm organic. Lentil peas in a me soup, I got it. Yo, don't panic, cause I'm organic. Vegan life, me live on none of them, can't stop me. Calabash, okra and squash, yes, me got them. Ready for go boil it and stop.
No bones, no blood in a me kitchen. Marijuana make me slippers. No poke tops in my flitters.